of Christmases Long, Long Ago is my new book, arriving for the 2025 Christmas season. Find out what Christmas was like centuries ago. Sneak preview, it was weird, and spooky, and rowdy, kind of gross sometimes. Find it wherever books are sold, in hardcover from Lions Press, and audiobook from Recorded Books. It's Christmas as you've never seen it before, and it makes a great gift. I'm Brian Earle. This is Christmas Past. The sun goes down, and the gas lights come on. The dark, the cold, the slushy thoroughfares, and fitful gusts of wind, none of it could stop the bustle and hum of Christmastime in New York City in 1882. Warm hearts beat under wool coats as shoppers jostle between market stalls where turkey and sugar-cured hams hung from hooks, where apples gleam like ornaments, where Christmas trees pile high in green drifts and wreaths overflow from wooden carts. The train stations double as makeshift bazaars, the air thick with roasted chestnuts and pine needles, the voices of peddlers rising above the steam and shuffle of travelers. Away from the market squares, in Manhattan's Murray Hill neighborhood, is a townhouse. Cozy, lived in, the home of a prosperous family. Decorated for the season and alive with the anticipation of the family's three young children. The parlor is bathed in a strange, steady glow. A fire blazes in the grate, but it doesn't crackle, doesn't snap, doesn't shift. It gives off no warmth, only light. On closer inspection, the fire is nothing more than colored paper, the illusion made real by electric light glowing from underneath. Broadway and Fifth Avenue had recently installed newfangled electric street lamps. The rest of the city streets, the ones that were lit at all anyway, remained in the amber glow of gas and oil. But electricity? In someone's home? In the early 1880s? And it wasn't just the artificial fire. The owner of the home placed an electric light inside an urn so the painted designs glowed from within like a ghostly lantern. The chandelier, a French word for a candle holder, didn't hold candles. It held still more electric lights. A house lit in countless ways by electric light, it's so common now. But back then, it was the stuff of surprise and delight, of wonder and awe. The stuff of inventors, tinkerers, businessmen, showmen. And our host for the evening, a certain mustachioed gentleman named Mr. Johnson, was all of those things. And on that night in 1882, he had something even more novel and more enchanting and more dazzling in store. By the street side window of the parlor stood a Christmas tree. That tradition itself was still young in America, only a few decades old to most families. But Johnson's idea of a Christmas tree was newer still. A newspaper reporter for the New York Times described it this way.
The tree was lighted by electricity, and children never beheld a brighter tree or one more highly colored than the children of Mr. Johnson when the current was turned and the tree began to revolve. It stood about 6 feet high in an upper room last evening and dazzled persons entering the room. There were 120 lights on the tree with globes of different colors. The light was divided into 6 sets, one set of which was lighted at a time in front as the tree went round, by a simple device of breaking and making connection through copper bands around the tree with corresponding buttons. The sets of lights were turned out and on at regular intervals as the tree turned around.
A Christmas tree not only lit by electric bulbs, but spinning. One full revolution every 10 seconds, cycling through red, then white, then blue. Astonished passers-by stopped in their tracks, their hurried steps arrested by the sight. A rush-hour crowd frozen still. They stood on the sidewalk and gawked at the window, staring at a marvel of the modern age. What they saw, what Johnson's family, friends, neighbors, what a handful of lucky reporters saw and scribbled about in handheld notebooks, were the first electric Christmas lights. Not bad for a guy who started out as a telegraph operator as a kid in Philadelphia. But his early years were spent tinkering with technology, always looking for the next big thing. It didn't take long before his curiosity and ambition led him to it. By his mid-20s, he was running the Automatic Telegraph Company in New York. That's where he made a fateful decision. He hired a wiry young 24-year-old who barely stopped to eat, who slept at his desk, who filled notebook after notebook with equations and sketches and half-mad ideas. 6 weeks in, he'd torn through the company's records, written a book's worth of notes, and run 2,000 experiments. His name was Thomas Edison. The two became inseparable. When Edison set up his famous Menlo Park lab, Johnson followed. When Edison needed someone to sell his ideas, Johnson turned them into gold. Papers described Johnson as the embodiment of his era, part engineer, part businessman, part Barnum. He took the phonograph on the road, a showman astonishing crowds with a miracle in a wooden box. When Edison bet on electric light, Johnson bet with him, risky as it was, convinced that the future was electric. Electricity had always been with us. It crackled in the sky, snapped in the dry winter air when wool coats brushed against skin. But it had been wild, dangerous, untamed. Then came the wires, the dynamos, the glowing filaments trapped in glass. Atoms, restless and invisible, racing down copper strands from power plants to street lamps and shop windows. In the 1880s, electricity was a wonder and a menace. Light bulbs were like bottled lightning, too new, too bright, too strange to trust. Newspapers ran sensational stories about accidental electrocutions or even called for bans on overhead lines. This is the world that Christmas lights were born into, a marvel in a time when most people still feared electricity, as festive and intriguing as they were threatening. But when it came to Christmas trees, let's consider the alternative. A candlelit tree was just a house fire waiting to happen, and those were common. Common enough, anyway, for some insurance companies to add clauses to their homeowners' policies against covering Christmas tree fires. So Johnson thought, what if? He commissioned sets of colored bulbs, about the size of a walnut wired on a strand. It had only been 3 years since the invention of the electric light bulb. Christmas lights were one of the first applications of home electricity and electric light. But they were a curiosity, nothing more. A bit of tinkering, a stunt by Johnson to delight his children, to showcase what Edison's company could do, to drum up a little publicity. And to be fair about it, those first light bulbs became hot while they were lit and may not have been much safer than the flaming candles they were replacing. They just weren't practical. Not yet, anyway. The average household wouldn't see electricity for years. And even when they did, and all those Gilded Age Manhattan socialites wanted to be among the first to host Christmas-lighted parties, Christmas lights still weren't practical. Those early versions didn't have screw-in sockets. Individual bulbs had to be hand-wired by an electrician. And then there was the price. When Edison's company finally began selling them in 1901, a single strand of just 9 bulbs cost the modern equivalent of $350. They just weren't for average people. They were for storefronts, grand hotels, a wealthy few families, and department stores looking to lure customers with a dazzling display. But time marched on. Electricity spread, costs fell, and the electric Christmas light, once a showman's trick, became a family tradition. Thanks to one man in the midst of a world in motion. A time when Christmas itself was still taking shape in America. The Christmas tree, once a European curiosity, now a household fixture. Santa Claus, his image sharpening, stepping out of folklore and into shop windows, onto printed pages, into every child's imagination. The old world's traditions meeting the new world's machines. Commerce turning Christmas into something grander, brighter, bigger. And electricity, the modern world itself humming to life, pushing back the dark. And forevermore at Christmas time, warming the winter hush, casting colors across tinsel and pine needles, flickering in frosted windows, radiating softly beneath blankets of snow, spilling garlands of glowing color from house trim, reflecting off rain-slicked streets, tangled in city skylines, filling town squares with luminous halos, glowing steady in quiet country homes. Did you ever stop to think that the vast majority of Christmases throughout history didn't include Christmas lights? It's impossible to imagine Christmas without them, which just goes to show how dramatically they've reshaped our experience of the holiday. As a child of the 1970s and 80s, I firmly believe that the one true Christmas light is the classic C7 incandescent bulb that comes in green, red, orange, blue, and white. Yes, they get hot, and they shatter, and they use a lot of energy, just as nature intended. Well, here we are, a full week at least into the Christmas season of 2025. I'm sure you have your Christmas lights up by now. Are they triggering any Christmas memories for you? Let's hear about it. I'll be sharing your Christmas memories this season in special episodes dedicated just to them. All you have to do is record yourself speaking into your phone's voice memo app and send it to christmaspastpodcast@gmail.com. Keep it reasonably short, clean, and family-friendly, and be sure to say your name and where you're from. Christmas Past is produced in wonderful Willow Glen, California, by yours truly, Brian Earle. Thanks to Zach Brown for doing the voiceover of that New York Times reporter, and thank you, as always, for listening and for being here. There's much more to come this season. I'm looking forward to spending the rest of it with you, so make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss anything. I'm doing things just a little differently this season to celebrate season 10 of the podcast and the release of my new book, but some things will never change, like the fact that I always love to hear from you, and I try to respond to every message I get. Again, I'm at christmaspastpodcast@gmail.com, or look for Christmas Past on your favorite social media platform. If you don't see me there and you think I should be, get in touch and let me know. And hey, if you're really feeling the Christmas spirit, why not help more people discover this show? It's as simple as telling a friend about it or leaving a rating and review. If you do leave a review, I'll send you a Christmas Past sticker, and a handwritten Christmas card is my way of saying thanks. Reach out for details, and until we meet again, may your days be merry and bright.